let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. One review calls The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates a captivating story that pulls at the heartstrings. Another says the novel has it all: drama, intrigue, romance, suspense, and sadly, the all-too-real horror stories of war that shattered lives that it left in its wake. Wilf Yates joined the Army to make a difference, but nothing prepared him for his place in history or in the heart of a nurse named Ann Davis. The story, inspired by the wartime diaries of John Yates' father, transports readers to the terrifying and heading times of the Great War. John Yates, the son of the wartime romance that inspired The Red Rose of Romance and War, lives in Australia. He left school at 14 to work as a sweeper in a tire retreading factory. At 15, he started his first business. With a number of patents to his name and circulation of his products Australia-wide, his packaging business grew rapidly. He still owns the company after 60 years. Two of his children are key managers in business with him today. His third child also involved in packaging and marketing of real food products for a multinational company in Sydney. John Yates, author of The Red Rose of Romance and War, our guest via Skype from Australia on This Week in America. John, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be on here.
I tell you, what a life. It's very impressive starting your own business at 15. We could do a whole program talking about all your ventures in business and how successful you've been. But on the program today, we'll talk about a successful debut novel. I mean, everybody, all the reviews are raving about The Red Rose of Romance and War. Let's first of all talk about the inspiration for this. I understand it started with 18 pages of your father's diary. Got this whole project started.
Yes, my father always kept a diary while he was away at war, which was really illegal. They weren't supposed to do that, but most of them did, I think. And he kept an 18-page diary. That's all it amounted to at the end. And I thought it was only fitting that it be made public. And so I set about to turn it into a much bigger issue and finished up with 380 pages of war and romance.
It really is. It's a mixture of everything. This book is doing exceptionally well. The book is The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates, our guest on the program. A book available at Amazon, the usual places. We'll give you a list of those throughout the program. Let's start with Wilf, a little bit of Wilf's background. What time frame are we talking about here?
Well, he signed up in 1916 and sailed for the Western Front that year. And he didn't arrive back in Australia till the end of 1918 or early 1919, probably. And so the rest of the time was spent on the Western Front and then backwards and forwards to a hospital in England. He was in hospital a couple of times, and it was one of those things that I think most of the people that were involved in the war were in and out of some sort of hospital. And he was just like that.
The book is The Red Rose of Romance and War. John Yates, our guest on the program. Let's talk about after he enlisted, boarded the ship that was departing for Sydney, taking off for the Western Front. What was his mood like and the mood in general among the troops as they were heading off to war?
Well, the ship that he sailed on was called the Suvik. And I think he, like most of the enlisted men on board, probably had never been to sea before. And he certainly had never even set foot on a rowboat before. So it was a very new experience for him. And you can only imagine how frightening it would have been leaving Sydney Heads in the middle of the night, pitch dark outside, storm clouds rolling. And so it was rather time of insecurity on board, not knowing what was coming next. And there was another 8 weeks of that before they got to the Western Front.
You do an excellent job in the book of capturing that, what these young men went through as they head off to battle. Where did Wilf spend most of his time during World War One?
Well, most of his time whilst in the trenches was around the Ypres area. It's pronounced in different ways between the French and the Flemish and the Walloons. of Belgium, but Ypres or Ypres was the area that he spent most of his time. Some time he spent in London, backwards and forwards to hospital, but then after finishing hospital, he went back to the same area of around the Ypres Peninsula.
How did your father meet, father the soldier at the time, meet up with Anne the nurse? How did that meeting come about?
Well, he arrived at the hospital, the King's College Hospital in London, and he'd been, I don't know how many hours in transit, but he had been awake for a long time. And then there was the ship, the trip over on the ship across the English Channel. And when he eventually arrived at the hospital, he was cared for by Nurse Anne Davis. And that was the beginning of a wonderful relationship that went on, and even included his second trip to hospital. He was put back into the same hospital some months later over another issue, and he met up with Anne Davis again in the same hospital.
How did this relationship evolve? Was it sort of love at first sight, or did this gradually evolve?
No, I think it was in both cases. It was a real attraction to each other right from the word go. Naturally, if you're a soldier and you're in hospital and you're lapsing in and out of consciousness, it probably doesn't take much to attract you to any sort of nurse. But he was very attracted to Anne Davis. And when he was finally released from the hospital, he plucked up enough courage to ask her to go with him on a picnic. And so that's how the relationship went on from there. And then they visited and saw all the sights of London, the Westminster Abbey and Trafalgar Square and Nelson's Column, Houses of Parliament. They did all those sort of things over a couple of days.
That's interesting. So as he's discharged, and now he has to leave, but he didn't want to end the relationship at that point, did he? He got enough nerve to ask her out.
That's right. They both were in the same boat. They were both very much attracted to each other.
The book is The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates. Danger is never far away, and this has been described as a lovely, lively, thrilling story of mud, blood, and romance. It's got it all in John's book. Let's talk about how the relationship developed. They were staying at a really interesting place with the original Tsar of Russia, his holiday home. Talk about that. And they heard one of the first public playings of a very famous world love song.
Yes, after his second visit to hospital, Anne and Wilf did a trip down to the south coast to Torquay, and they stayed in the Headland Hotel, and that was the holiday home, the former holiday home of the Tsar of Russia and his family, and they used to holiday there quite frequently. But they stayed at the hotel, and while they were there, a Maori entertainer who had a Maori princess with him as a soloist, and he played a number of well-known songs, and then he mentioned that he was going to play a new song, and I'm sure it's a song that's known to many people around the world as Pakarakara Ane, and it's a lovely song, and probably developed into the best-known love song coming out of New Zealand of all time. And it was written only weeks before this first rendition at the Headland Hotel. And it was all about the princess who was relating the story of how these two lovers being separated because he was going off to war. And she was so sad that he was going. She was putting pen to paper and saying that even the sun couldn't dry her tears because her tears were so strong for him, and she was waiting until he came back. And it's a very, very lovely tune, a very lovely love song as well.
As I mentioned, this book really has all of the elements. In addition to this, to the romance and the relationship, while at the hotel, he was implicated in a murder. How did that happen?
Yes, well, while while Anne was doing some washing, Wilf decided to take a little trip to walk down to the water's edge. And he went away, believing he'd be gone for half an hour. And when he was on his way back, he was stopped by a security detail saying they couldn't go any further because there had been an incident. Now, the incident happened to be related to Anne by a young girl running screaming through the hotel saying that an Australian soldier had fallen over the cliff and drowned. And, of course, Anne immediately thought it was Wilf. And so then they were looking for the murderer. Then the police came and sealed up the hotel. And they believed that it had been done by another Australian. So Wilf was naturally implicated in that. And so Anne believed that he was dead. Wilf believed he was being accused. And so it became quite a dramatic scene at the hotel. But all worked out well in the end.
Yes, it did. And you can follow that all along in The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates, our guest on the program, the author of the book. He took part in what's been described by many as the most significant battle that changed the course of World War One. Talk about that and the significance, because he was there for this very, very crucial battle.
Well, he was. And if you remember that the First World War was a series of trench attacks where one side would attack the other and they'd make some ground, and then the next day that ground would be lost to the other side. And so for a period of 3 or 4 years, there was virtually no ground made at all. And it wasn't until the Australian General John Monash was given control of the combined forces, and that included the American forces, the British forces, the Canadian forces, the Australian forces, for this one particular battle, the Battle of Mont Saint-Quentin. And this was the first time in the First World War where a general had engaged the services of the cavalry, the tanks, the infantrymen, the aircraft that were available, and he joined them all together in a very well-planned battle. And that changed the course of the war, and it's been credited by many generals as being the most significant battle of all battles that were fought during the First World War, the Battle of Mont Saint-Quentin.
What happened to Wilf and Anne after the war? Were they able to keep their relationship?
Sad story, because Anne was trying to find out where Wilf was on the Western Front, and she wasn't getting letters, and Wilf was on the Western Front not getting any letters from Anne. And due to circumstances that were rather freakish at the time, the letters that Anne sent the critical letter that Anne sent had been in a postal van that was bombed in London not long after the mail had been collected from the post box. And so that mail was lost. And then Wilf's mail that he was sending to Anne was sunk in a bombing attack on a barge in the Thames before it left the western side. And so both of them thought the other was dead, and they weren't getting any communication at all. And so both gave up and believed that it was all over. And of course, that became a very sad time for both of them. And in particular, when Wilf found out that Anne had supposedly been bombed in a air raid shelter that he had built for her parents at their home. And of course, he went to pieces and wanted to return to Australia straight away at the end of the war. And so it became a very different story from there on.
And it's interesting, as you read, you forget that it was difficult to communicate during that period. And a lot of the turmoil they were going through was just their inability, as you just mentioned, some of the problems in trying to communicate and figure out where the other person was and how they were doing. It's all in the book, The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates. Talk about Anne. She joined, it's a very prestigious nursing group. Quames, am I saying that? Quaimns. Talk about that group.
I believe that's right, yes. And she did. She joined up because she thought she wasn't getting any communication from Wilf. And so she went and joined up with Quaymes and went to France, and she was posted to a place called Corby. And it's interesting that Corby was the general hospital for the regimental aid post that was actually in the town hall of Corby. And it wasn't very far from two events that took place around about that time. One was where Adolf Hitler was wounded up the road, and the other was where the Red Baron was brought down in his flying machine. And both within a mile or so of where she was stationed at Corby. So that added a lot of extra interest to the stay there as well.
How did he cope with leaving London without Anne? They've got this relationship. There's obviously a foundation there. How did he deal with that?
Well, not very well at all, because he didn't know where Anne was, and he only suspected that she might have been hurt. But he arrived back in London after the war had been declared, the armistice had been declared. And he arrived back in London and went straight back to King's Cross, where he knew her home to be. And as he turned the corner around the hotel on the corner of where she lived, he was confronted with not the house that he knew, but an empty block of land that had been cleared after a bombing. And he went across the road. He was trying to find someone that might have known what happened. And he went across the road and found an old fellow there. And he asked him if he knew what had happened to the Davis family. And the old fellow said he hadn't been there very long at all, but he understood that all three of them, the mother, the father, and the daughter, had been killed in a bomb attack with a direct hit on an air raid shelter in the backyard. And, of course, that was the air raid shelter that Wolf had built himself. Yes. To protect the family. And, of course, he went to pieces. And that was the beginning of a lifetime of, we'll call them fits, that my father suffered. And that was the first one. And from the rest of his life, he was struck down with these turns that he had from time to time. And it impacted his life greatly right from that moment.
You know, it's interesting because in the book, you do an excellent job of portraying what they go through. We talked about the mood on the ship going over, all of these young men, boys in some cases, going to battle. What was that like as they were returning to Sydney Harbour after the war ended? What was the mood like at that point? Some of the feelings.
Well, you can imagine the war is over, and all most of the soldiers wanted to do was have a good time.
Yes.
In London or in England. Or alternatively, to get home. Now, because of Wolf's tragic circumstances, where he had just found that Anne had been killed in this attack in her backyard, he just wanted to get home. And so he went down to the dock and tried to find out how long he'd have to wait. And they told him, you just got to get in the queue. But then one of the fellows there saw his obvious distress and said, well, wait a minute, if you want to go today, I can slip you in here. There's been some strange circumstances. So he put him on a ship called the Plassey. And you can imagine they got 8 or 9 weeks to go to get home. And he had to really do nothing but think of his own circumstances. And when they arrived off the heads in Sydney Harbour, I think that was one of the most tragic periods of time in thinking back of where he had been in the trenches, where they didn't know whether they were going to survive the next day or the next hour or the next minute. And with the rattle of the machine guns still going through his head, and he rounded the Hornby Lighthouse coming into Sydney Harbour. And that was a very, very traumatic time for him, because he never thought that he would be able to see Australia again, let alone set foot on it. And so I think everybody on board the ship was really in a state of, it's hard to imagine, but I believe that they would have all been very much affected by seeing Sydney again for the first time in a long time.
A couple minutes left in the program. How did Wolf handle returning to civil life? And this is amazing when you think about the trauma that he had to deal with 4 years of trench warfare, like you mentioned, just the constant sound of battle all around you. How did he cope? You talked before about how many issues he had. Was he able to actually cope with all of this?
Well, I think he coped with it very well. When you consider so many other people that didn't cope with their return very well, and you read stories of even Lieutenant Joe Maxwell, which was his senior officer in his company. Joe Maxwell became the highest decorated soldier. Sorry, the second highest decorated soldier from the First World War. And Joe Maxwell returned to our district, and he didn't handle things very well. And he wrote a book called Hell's Bells and Mademoiselles. And he relates in that book how badly he did suffer in trying to adjust. But I think my father adjusted pretty well, although it did have a lot of toll on his future. But I think compared to most others, he did very well. He went back to his bullet driving days. That's where he'd started from. And so life had to go on, and he raised a family. And I think he did a very good job, really, of handling things.
Got about 30 seconds left. What's this meant to you to be able to tell your father's story and do it in such detail, in such a loving manner? This has to be an emotional time for you.
Very emotional. As a matter of fact, there were many times that when I was typing, and I'm not a great typist, many times that I felt I couldn't go on because it was so emotional. That's how it affected me. And when I read sections of the book again now, I get very emotional. It's one of those things that it's hard to imagine how hard it must have been for him and others like him, putting up with 3 or 4 years of sheer hell on earth.
Yes.
And to come back and have to start their life all over again. But I think I wanted to let other people know just how hard it was for these people, and that's why I wrote the book. I was encouraged to write it, and I was able to take a lot of the information, not only from his diary, but my early life, where I used to probe him for stories about the war, and he used to tell me what went on. So I knew a lot of it, but having the diary to back it all up was very good.
Well, it's a powerful story, receiving excellent reviews. The book is called The Red Rose of Romance and War by John Yates, our guest on the program, coming to us from Australia. The book's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, you can link on directly to the Amazon link and get information on John's book, The Red Rose of Romance and War. John, a pleasure having you on the program. Thank you so much for being on the program and sharing the story. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Rick.
It's been a pleasure. John Yates, our guest, The Red Rose of Romance and War, the book. You'll find information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.